there's also people who are just going to hate on what you do, no matter what you do. And if you do income reports, they'll probably just assume you're a dickhead and you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, listener, it is Wednesday morning, and you are listening to session number 10 of the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast. I just came back from the World Domination Summit. It's been fun. It's a bit woo-woo. I guess I recommend for you to go next year. The topic of the day is online content creation. I have Dan Norris with me, who has released more content in the last 2 years than anyone else I know. Let's find out what works and what doesn't for him and see if we can steal any ideas.
My name's Dan Norris. I run a company called WP Curve with my co-founder Alex, and expertise, I'm not sure about expertise. Our business is WordPress support, and we market the business by creating a lot of content and just building a business through word of mouth. So all of our businesses either comes through our content or through word of mouth, and we've managed to sign up, I think, 320 customers in 12 months now.
That's pretty insane. But I remember before you even started this new company, you were putting out massive content online. I think I've heard you say somewhere you put out like 5-6 pieces of content on some days, like single days, right?
Yeah, I did. I went a little bit crazy there for a while. I think my best or worst, depending on which way you look at it, was 13 different posts in one day. But I couldn't keep that up because it's kind of a boring day when you spend all day sitting there typing content out. I had a blog before I started WP Curve, and I'd spent a year building an analytics business. And during that year, I wrote, I think, maybe 200 or 300 pieces of content, and most of that in like a 6-month period. And even before that, I'd written probably 200 posts on my old blog, which I'd ran for sort of 3 or 4 years. So I went through a stage of writing a lot of content because it was really the only thing I knew how to do to get traffic and get my name out there. And now we're doing less. I'm probably doing I just did our monthly report. So I did, I think, 8 different pieces of content last month. Unfortunately, because we're so busy now, I can't do anywhere near as much. But yeah, I kind of built a bit of a name for myself by doing a lot of content in 2012, 2013.
Yeah, that's what I really known you for. So let's talk about 2012-13 a little bit. What takeaways did you come out with out of all that writing?
I had my first few blog posts that did really well. So I think I remember looking at all the content I'd written, and I think I'd written 300 different blog posts before I had a single post with more than 10 tweets. So I'd made the classic mistake of just writing a lot of content and just kind of hoping that it got traction. And we get people, someone asked me today about that, saying, you know, I'm writing a blog, you know, I'm kind of hoping people share the content. We've written a lot of content, but we're not getting much action. And that's where I was prior to 2013. And I guess I just kind of wrote so much that I eventually figured out what people wanted. And I sort of noticed the things that people really responded to. And in our case, it was probably two different things. One is like the more personal type entrepreneurship stories that I share, and like things like income reports and just notes about struggles of starting a business and thinking about having to get a job and all this, like the kind of roller coaster stuff of entrepreneurship. That's content usually does really well for us. And the other one is just long detailed guides, which I started doing. I did a podcasting guide, which was the first post I did that had over 100 tweets. And then I had a couple more of those that I sort of had consistent success with, where I'd put a lot of time into the post and then like get much more reward than I would if I had have done sort of 10 individual posts.
So if you were starting out now and you don't have too much experience online yet and you're trying to start a blog out, what kind of topics would you go after? Because I mean, the roller coaster probably doesn't hit in the beginning, and there's no income reports yet. So what would you recommend? Other just guides, or is there anything else?
Well, I did my first income report when there was no income, and they were popular, and they're still popular. Like that post is still a popular post because we still talk about it now. Like we're up to, I think, almost $24,000 a month now. And a year ago, I'd written an income report that was $0, and I was kind of wondering what to do. So that post is still pretty popular. And I think that's what makes my story kind of interesting, in that like I've been documenting this whole journey since before it was going well for me, which is not that usual. You know, most people will be happy to talk about it when it's going well, but I've been documenting it the whole time. Not to say that's necessarily the best thing for everyone to do. I think like if you look at the way various people have been successful with content, it's not the one formula. So you look at KISS Metrics, they've done outsourced writers and really long detailed guides really well. You know, someone like Shramco's done the video stuff really well. Dan Andrews has done the or John Dumas, those guys have done the podcasting stuff really well. Some people do in-person conferencing. Some people do infographics. I mean, in terms of advice, I would be looking for A, what your audience is responding to, B, what you're good at yourself and you know that you're kind of something you can do really well, and then trying to be better than everything else that's out there. So not focusing on the quantity and just focusing on the quality instead. So if you pick a topic, say you pick, I'm going to do an article on how to do a podcast interview or how to be interviewed on a podcast, then I would be looking at like what's the best medium to use. Should I do this as an interview? Should I interview someone like Shramco who's been interviewed on thousands of podcasts and ask for his tips, or should I do a video, or should I do a slide share? Should I do a written content? And that decision would come from what is having an impact with your audience and what you're good at. And then I would look at what else is out there and, you know, just try and build something that's better than everything else that's out there. And if you do that, you're much more chance of getting a lot of traction with that content than if you just create 10 different posts on 10 different general topics.
When you mentioned the income reports, it seems like you started those with WP Curve, right, last year, but you blogged for about 2 years before that and you didn't have income reports in there, did you?
Yep. The first one was 2012.
Oh, okay.
So I was doing income reports with Informally, which was my last business, and there was no income. Like I ran that business for 6 months before I even put up a payment button. So I was doing those reports and they were just sort of like monthly reports. And then when I started making income, I just started adding the income to those reports.
So would you recommend putting the income report for the project that you're working on or everything? Because I think a lot of people don't want to share their whole income of their entire business online, right? So,
well, there's probably a few different things going on there. One is it doesn't matter so much what you want to do. I mean, I wouldn't be sharing your income if you really, really do have a massive problem doing that. But if you're coming from a creation point of view from, you know, what I want rather than what your customers want, then you're for failure from the start because you're creating it for yourself. You're creating it for other people. And if you want to have an impact with those people, then you need to be paying attention to what they want. I'm not saying that everyone should be doing income reports, but I think the more generally as a general, I guess, observation that the posts that I see doing really, really well are the sort of revealing ones where people are being really honest and real. And that probably goes across industries. It's probably not just in the IM sort of marketing entrepreneurship crowd. I think that's probably just in general. The people that do well are the ones who really are prepared to reveal more. Like if you look at the James Altucher content that he puts out, his books and his posts and his podcasts, like his philosophy is if you don't feel comfortable pressing publish, then you shouldn't be pressing publish. Don't feel uncomfortable. I just said that backwards. But yeah, if you don't feel uncomfortable, so uncomfortable that you're kind of scared to press publish, then, you know, you haven't revealed enough. You know, I guess it's comfortable for me. Maybe it's not comfortable for other people. Maybe that's a case of don't do it if it's not comfortable. Or maybe it's like the more you reveal, the more you're going to connect with people and you should just kind of embrace that. I'm not really sure what the best advice is, but that's just what I've learned works.
It does make sense. I think there's got to be a balance though, because at some point it gets kind of gimmicky, right? Like it gets to like a competition. Who's going to give out more of their income and all their problems and the things they're facing? So it becomes kind of like this big drama. And the business gets lost in there, I feel like.
Well, it depends what problems you're trying to solve. I mean, a lot of entrepreneurs, like if your audience is entrepreneurs, which in our case it is, their problems aren't just business related. Like if I look at my business now, like we don't really have any problems. For the last 6 months, I can't think of any major problems that I've need to get onto Google and solve. We've got typical sort of growth challenges, but it's all positive. Like the only real problems we have are the kind of the emotional challenges of being an entrepreneur, and that they're the things where, like, if I was to listen to a podcast interview, I'd be unlikely to listen to AdWords tactics, but I'd be likely to listen to Mark Cuban talk about his how he got started in entrepreneurship, and or James Altucher, how he lost millions and how he gained them again. And like, I don't know, I just kind of think you can see it as gimmicky. I mean, some people might do it for the wrong reasons. I kind of feel like in our case, since we've been doing it for 2 years, since before we were making money, I think it's pretty obvious that we're not doing it for the wrong reasons. There's also people who are just going to hate on what you do, no matter what you do. And if you do income reports, they'll probably just assume you're a dickhead and you're doing it for the wrong reasons. But I tend not to listen to those people either, because they're not the audience that's telling us what is connecting with them. They're just people that are hating.
The one problem I did see you facing is others stealing your website, like all the content and everything. I think I've seen you mention it a couple of times.
It's kind of funny. I mean, we weren't the first people to do WordPress support, so I'm not kind of treating it like an invention that no one else can do, but I always do have a bit of a giggle when someone else kind of copies the model exactly. But the thing is that we're a year ahead of anyone who's trying to copy it today. So we've got a year's worth of lessons and we kind of know what works, what doesn't work with the model. And it's kind of hard for someone to come in and just do exactly the same thing. Like, our business works because we're able to hire great people, and we've got all the systems in place, and we've built that. And we've got a hell of a lot of trust that we've built up over years and years and years, and a really big community around us that are supporting us. It's growing without any advertising at all. So, I mean, you just can't replicate that stuff. You can copy the copy on the page. But yeah, I'm not in the slightest bit worried that someone's going to steal our business and it's going to affect our business.
I do think it's kind of funny too, especially when they forget to even take your names down.
Yeah, well, that was funny. And then I think the guy from Startup Daily is friends with me on Facebook, and he must have seen some of my rants about it. So he wrote an article calling them out, which was kind of funny. But yeah, I honestly don't have a problem with it. Like, I think it's kind of funny when people are silly enough to think they can just steal some copy and that means that their business will be successful, because it's just not anywhere near that simple.
Yeah. What kind of marketing are you doing right now, especially when it comes to content? You're still writing, you're still doing podcasts. Are you into videos, and which one of those works the best?
None of them really work very well at all for us other than the writing. And we don't do that much of it anymore, as I said, because we're just too busy. And so I think I've gone from sort of doing two or three a week to doing like one a week. And we've also got some outsourced writers in now who are doing some content for us. And that's also pretty time consuming, because I'm really picky about what goes on our site. I don't want to just put anything up there. So I might write maybe one post a week, and then I'm working with an external writer on maybe one or two posts a month, like a detailed guide type post. We don't do any video stuff. I tried that. I was shit at it. I moved on. We do the podcast sometimes, but it's just one of those things. It's kind of hard to measure the success of it. And it's good to chat with people. I prefer doing ones like this where I'm chatting with someone else and they have to do all the work. It's kind of a lot of work to get the podcast together and organize the guests and do the recording and everything. We've sort of fallen off that a little bit. Like, we only did one episode last month and I think two the month before. But that was really good for like networking and general authority and things like that, especially early on.
Yeah, I do see that the frequency is all over the place with the podcast when I look at the dates.
Yeah, I do a weekly email, which I've done every week for a lot of years as well. And I think I've got about 10,000 people on that list. And that's like the main, every week we'll have at least one piece of content to share, and we'll send that out to the list. And then we have lots and lots of sequences in Infusionsoft for various different things. I've also written a book that it's getting edited at the moment. We've got a bunch of stuff coming out. We have plugins as well that we've given away in the past, and that they've done really well for like getting email opt-ins. Just being more useful. Another thing I'd like to do is work on a big process for recruiting offshore staff, because we've had a lot of success with that and a lot of people have that problem. So I think I'll spend some time on that. And when we do those, we normally give away like the actual process or like a Google Doc or something to help people. Like, that useful kind of stuff works really well for us for getting email opt-ins.
Where do you find your staff?
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of the same as the rest of the business. Is like, it just kind of works because we've sort of built up that trust and authority over time. Most of our staff that are employed at the moment have come by referral from existing staff. So we've got guys in the Philippines who work at universities, and they recruit from the universities, and they kind of tell their friends that they've got a great company that's growing really fast and is really flexible with their staff. And so they refer us people. We do get on job boards and things. I think we've hired people from Best Jobs, PH. I think we've sort of used contractors here and there from Odesk and Elance and some part-timers, especially for outside of the Philippines, like over in South America. But yeah, the actual finding them is not so much the hardest bit. The hardest bit is like working out if they're good and keeping them happy and sort of managing them, managing the onboarding. All of that is the stuff that takes all the work.
What do you think are some easy wins when it comes to putting out content and trying to get opt-ins and marketing your business?
Well, go on someone else's podcast is an easy win, because it requires, you know, 40 minutes of your time, and it puts your authority alongside theirs. Everyone's looking for podcast guests. Like, if I have any kind of reasonable person who's interesting email me and ask to be on the podcast, normally I'll say yes, because it takes a lot of work out of it for me. And if I think it'll be valuable for my audience, it's pretty easy. So I like going on other people's podcasts. Other content marketing wins, I mean, it sort of depends what stage you're at. I think just being useful is the best thing you can do. So just really paying attention to what are the posts that people are really reacting to. Useful is one thing, and I guess connecting with them is another thing. So I pay attention when I send my weekly email. If I get a lot of replies that say this, you know, I really connected with this, I feel this, I'm going through this, then that's a good sign for me. I know that I'm on track with that particular content. Or if I get replies saying, oh, this is really useful, I'm going to install this and use it in my business or whatever, then I know I'm on track. And that goes for comments on the site and shares on social media. Like, if people are sharing a post, I did a post on Medium a month or two ago called What I Learned Failing at 83%. It was talking about the 4-hour out of five failures that we've had in the last 12 months. And when people shared that on social media, like a lot of people grabbed bits of the post, different quotes out of the post to kind of share the bits that I could see that they were relating to. And to me, that's a sign that they're really engaged with the content. It's not just like they've read something and go, oh yeah, this is useful, I'll send it to my buffer. It's kind of like there's something I've said that they can really relate to because they've been through the same thing. So paying attention to those little details, I think, is important.
So moving forward, which type of content are you going to be focusing on? Just articles? Because it seems like you said videos didn't work out and the podcast is not really doing much for you.
Mainly we'll do a guide, at least one guide a month. So it'll be a detailed guide, like the recruitment one, or we're working on like an email opt-in one and a content marketing one. We've got a whole bunch of different guides we're working on. So that's sort of more useful, longer form written content. And I'll keep doing my more personal sort of entrepreneurship stuff and the monthly reports. The monthly reports always go really well. I think we had 1,000 visits on last month's one, and it takes me a couple of hours to put together, and it keeps us honest as well. I really like doing them. I did yesterday's one, just sat in the office for like 5 hours and smashed it out, probably the biggest one I've done. And I really like doing that post. So that content will keep going. And then I know Alex is doing a lot more in-person stuff. So we put a podcast up today, which is a presentation he did at WordCamp. And so he's going to try and get more of that kind of work. And we turn that into slide shares and turn that into a podcast episode, and but also get that in-person stuff going, which he's really good at, and it kind of takes the relationships to a new level. So we'll probably do more of that as well. I think that's about it. I think we're kind of aim for about 10 or 15 posts a month now, and that will be enough if they're high-quality posts, and I'm not so longer worried about. Like I was trying to do one post a day this year, but I'm not really that worried about the quantity anymore because I found that the really big, long, detailed ones just get so much more value than the shorter ones that it's not really worth focusing on the quantity.
When you say guide, does that mean just a long article, or is it something else like a PDF or something that people need to opt in to grab?
It can be both, but normally it's just a long article. Like if you search for podcast, WP Curve Podcasting Guide, you can see the first one I did. We've got a whole bunch up on our site, wpcurve.com/marketing-guides. I think we've got about 15 of them. They're just long articles that go into really specific detail about a particular topic. In some cases, we've got a downloadable as part of them. Like I've got a conversions one where you can download a Google Doc, which kind of you can use to review your site. So that usually works pretty well if you can have something to download at the end as like an email up. But we don't always have something.
What do you think about webinars?
We haven't really done any webinars. I mean, everyone seems to have a lot of success with them. Our content marketing efforts are not very organized because neither me or Alex are very like, we kind of just like to work on what we want to work on at the time. And if we can write a process for something and delegate it, then we'll do that and delegate that to the team. But if we can't do that, we kind of tend to not do the content consistently. So webinars is one of those ones that we kind of wrote down as something to do, but we never really did. It also, I think it works better in some businesses. Like I'm not sure if it would work too well in our business. Maybe it would, but yeah, I haven't done much with it. I know like people like John Dumas John especially has just done amazingly well with webinars. I think that probably suits his audience a bit better and his topic a bit better.
I think it fits his personality really well too. He's one
that's
of those,
true too, yeah.
He's one of those type of guys that's really good on video and just has that emotion and energy too.
Yeah, that's right. And that's important. Like that's what I mean about doing what content works. Because I know like Alex is really good doing the upfront in-person like presentation stuff. I'm good at writing because I kind of like to think and plan what's going to be communicated before it's communicated. It just works better for me. Some people are really good off the cuff. You know, some people are just like, listen to Adam Carolla's podcast. Like the guy's just a freak. He's just a complete natural at podcasting. And he's talked about I know he's got best-selling books and stuff, but I think like the process for him to actually pull a book together is more about getting someone else to pull together all of his rants because he's just not the guy who kind of sits and writes stuff down. But yeah, so play to your strengths, I guess.
Yeah, I can imagine that. He's probably plugging Dragon Speaking into somewhere and just going off and he has a book done by the time the week's over.
That's right, yeah. And I've heard Stramko say the same thing, you know, with his, like, he doesn't do a lot of written content. Like, all of his stuff is written up by his team, but most of his stuff is video or podcast. He works well off the cuff. He doesn't have to kind of have everything written out, and he's playing to his strengths there. But, I mean, I've found, like, with our article, a good article on our site will get so much more traction than I've seen from other people doing a good podcast or a good video that I think for us it's really worth trying to look for those big hits. We've got content like our AdWords guide, which will get 2,000 or 3,000 visits a month. And it's about a year old and it's been getting 2,000 or 3,000 visits every single month. And you don't really get that with podcast or with video or with other kind of methods, I don't think. You don't get that like ongoing traffic from Google or from links that you do with a really good detailed piece of content.
I think with the podcast, when people catch your podcast maybe on the 60th or 70th episode, if they like it, they'll go back to the first one. and start listening from the beginning to end. So I think you do get some of that on podcasts. I'm not sure about the videos.
The problem with that, though, is the metrics are just, I mean, the actual downloads of a podcast is so far from figuring out whether that person is actually engaged with you. I mean, you hardly ever hear from, like, once you've got a busy podcast where people are kind of always ringing in and commenting, then that's cool. But a lot of podcasts don't work that way. Like, we hardly ever hear from people about our podcast. We hardly ever get comments on the posts. It's really hard to get people back to the site afterwards. So even if we had like 500 downloads on a particular podcast, like the traffic to that page would be small and the conversions would be almost non-existent and the comments would be almost non-existent. So it's kind of hard to measure like that success versus an actual written piece of content.
I do agree that it's really hard to get people back to the website, especially if they're in the car or wherever they're listening to it or in the gym.
Yeah, I listen to podcasts all the time and I never go to their sites. I mean, I listen to more content on podcasts than I do on written content because I don't really like sitting there reading stuff, but I never go to their site. I kind of listen to podcasts and, you know, I kind of feel like I know them and there are a lot of benefits to having the podcast, but I don't think those benefits can really be compared to having an article where thousands of people are hitting and, you know, hundreds of people are opting in.
So you love writing, but you don't like reading. Explain to me how that works.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't explain that. I'm sure I'm not the first person. I find it really hard to read anything. I mean, I can't even read a menu at a cafe, so I'm not really sure. I can't explain it.
I've never heard that one before.
I don't really know the answer.
But you did write a book, right? The 7-Day Startup?
Yeah, I mean, I find it pretty easy to write a lot of content. I would never call myself a writer because I don't think I'm very good at it. And I don't think I'm like very good at like crafting a story around a book and kind of using the techniques that writers use that just goes above and beyond what I'm capable of doing. Writing the amount of content is not an issue for me, and writing about stuff that people care about seems to be something I'm good at, but the actual technical aspects of being a writer, I'm not good at. I've got an editor, Alyssa from the DC, who's going through and reviewing all of that now, and I think she's put more work into it than I did, but hopefully it'll be ready soon.
Okay, because I thought you put that out already, because I've actually skimmed through it.
I think I put it on Facebook asking if anyone wanted to check out the first draft, and that was a good 3 or 4 months ago now. And then once I gave it to Alyssa, it's kind of taken a whole different shape and it's being reviewed. And I also put out a lot of content to do with the podcast, to do with the book. So I put out a lot of posts on Medium. I did a lot of podcast interviews, and then I just started building a list for people who want to grab it. So you can sign up on our site. But the actual book hasn't been released yet, unless you were part of that sort of beta.
Yeah, but you did mention that it's the 7-Day Startup. Do you think that's really feasible?
Well, I think it depends on a few things. Like our business, for example, was started in 2 days, and 12 months later, we're at $280,000 a year in annual recurring revenue, and we employ 15 people, and we've got over 300 customers. So I would be lying if I said it wasn't possible. But I guess the point of the book is not so much starting a business in 7 days. The point is, like, what things do you have to focus on to work out if that business is going to have traction? So I mentioned before that we've done 5 different businesses in the last 12 to 18 months, and 4 of them have failed. If it had taken me 18 months for each one of those to realize that they were a failure, then I would be screwed and I'd be working for a job if anyone wanted to employ me, not as a writer. But luckily, we moved really quickly and we kind of learned to pay attention to the metrics that matter. And as a result, we were able to realize very quickly that WP Curve was the one we should be focusing on. And we did that by not looking at all of the sort of vanity metrics that you look at when you start, when you want to launch something, like putting up a launch page and looking at how many email subscribers you've got and how many people tell you it's a great idea. But we looked at who's signing up and what they're saying about the service, and are they staying with the service? Are they paying us? And we followed that momentum rather than anything else. And that's really what the book is about.
The one thing that was missing from the first draft, at least from what I've seen, is that the whole process would work if you have a mailing list. Without the mailing list, I can't imagine that process working.
No, not true. I mean, in our case, our marketing is based off our email list because that's what I do. That's what I'm good at. And I've been sending an email for however many years. But I've got lots of examples of the book of businesses that have started in different ways. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt that any asset that you have to bring into a business is going to be a massive advantage. And whether that asset is that you're a really good talker, or you've got a whole bunch of funding, or you've got 50 grand from your last business, or you've got a co-founder who's a technical genius, or you've got an email list, or you are an amazing designer and everything you put up is going to go viral on Mashable. All of those things have a huge impact on whether or not something's going to get traction. But they're also not really an excuse. I mean, there's plenty of examples of people who've just gone out, you know, on a startup weekend or something, created something and have found their own way to market it. And the other thing about it is that it's not a guarantee for success too, because I had that email list for four of the other companies that we started, and all of those failed. While it is important and it is a leg up, it's not a kind of determining factor in whether or not something's going to work. At the end of the day, you need to work out how to get your idea in front of a lot of people and work out a way to do that that you can do well. And in our case, I did have an advantage of having somewhat of a list. I think when I started informally, I had my list of about 1,500 people. And then I worked on that over time and built that authority over time to create WP Curve. But the thing is that most people don't start out as an entrepreneur with nothing. Like, if you are literally starting with nothing, then it's obviously going to be very hard. But most people kind of flail around with ideas and, you know, they have a little bit of traction here and there and they have a little bit of an email list, or, you know, they're able to get presentation gigs at conferences or whatever, or they've got a forum that they've got some authority in. Most people have something, and it's just a case of working out how you can get your message out to people, enough people to work out if it's going to get traction. And then when it does get traction, how are you going to focus and systemize everything so you can just milk that momentum for as long as you can.
That sounds like a good intro to the book. When is the book coming out officially? Is there a date?
There's no date. I think it's probably not too far off. It's going to be free, by the way. I kind of feel like it doesn't have to come out on a date. There's not going to be a big launch. I'm not really into that and or capable of getting my head around launching anything like that. So it's just going to be a case of we're going to put it up probably within the next month, I hope, but it's sort of out of my hands at the moment. And we'll give it away to our email list. Hopefully people will like it and share it. It'll just be free on our site, wpcurve.com/7-day-startup.
Cool. So if people want to reach out to you or follow you, where should they go?
So my email is dan@wpcurve.com. You can send me an email if you want any feedback on your idea. I like kind of looking at other people's ideas and giving them feedback on what they're doing. I'm on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter handle is @TheDanNorris, T-H-E Dan Norris. So you can follow me on there. Where I use Facebook more, you can find me on there. That's probably about it.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review on iTunes, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.